Greetings, everybody, and welcome to Unraveling, Unfolding, Stories of Right Livelihood Journeys. Our guest today is a dear friend, Paul Scott. Paul, maybe I'll let you say hi and welcome our listeners, and then I will give a little bit of a bio and introduction of who you are.
Absolutely. Hi, everybody. I'm thrilled to be here with you today, Simon. I really value our relationship. Simon and I are very good friends, and I really admire a lot about what you're doing, and I'm excited. Yeah, I'm excited to be here with you and share anything I can to possibly help or help people see another viewpoint, or if my story can aid anyone in shining some light on anything that can help you. So that's great.
Awesome. Thank you. I'm delighted to have you here. Let me give a very kind of short bio of Paul. Given that we've known each other for 13 years now, I can say a lot, but I'm not. I'm going to let Paul do it. Paul's journey, though, is absolutely fascinating, and I'm delighted to have him share some of it. And it includes overcoming childhood disabilities. It includes overcoming a life-threatening illness and near-death experiences, alcoholism, bankruptcy, and divorce. And Paul, from a very young age, has been in touch with the mystical and fascinated with all things metaphysical, and I can definitely testify to that. Currently, Paul is a transpersonal therapist, life coach, and quantum touch instructor. He draws on a broad spectrum of experiences in the healing field, and really assisting others in overcoming whatever blocks them from their personal best. Paul is a co-founder of a wonderful annual event, a retreat in the Vancouver area called Living Vision, where I've had the chance to play and participate as well. And it's a grassroots community of artists, healers, and visionaries who are dedicated to living their life purpose. He currently is a contributing columnist to the magazine Science to Sage, and he contributes to the spiritual program in a local college in Vancouver called Rhodes Wellness College. Paul is currently in his private practice with his lovely wife, Kathy, and they are the only two Quantum Touch Level 1 and 2 instructors in Greater Vancouver. So, this is a bit more of a formal. Paul, welcome.
Thank you, Simon.
It's so wonderful to present you because, I mean, knowing of your journey since we met in the spring of 99, actually very close to 13 years ago, it's been wonderful for me to witness. Yet, I'd love you maybe to give us... let's call it a Reader's Digest. Where you started, how you ended up, and if you're going to make it too long, I'm going to interject with the occasional questions. But just walk us through what were maybe some of the bigger milestones on your journey from there to where you currently are.
Sure, Simon. Yeah, you know what I go to a lot is I believe that a lot of what we're inspired to do in our life comes from a place of what we've had to overcome, you know, and what we personally overcome to me is such a valuable contribution we can give others because it's real to us, you know, it's our own personal experience of what we've had to overcome in our own life. And it's gritty, it's real, it's authentic, and I believe from that place we can really share something that is meaningful to ourselves. And also, it's the lesson that I'm learning in my life as well. What we teach what we most need to learn, I believe. And so my own journey, what was a big part of my journey, probably what I go back to a lot when I do any kind of personal therapeutic work, I always end up at certain pivotal places in my life. And you see, wow, that was very, you know, an influential. And one of them is me being 7 years old. And I lived in England. And it was a little neighborhood where that was your world. Mm-hmm. And so those kids were my world at that time, right? And that's all I knew. And of course, my own family. I have one brother and then my mom and dad. And I had handicaps. So one of them being that I couldn't walk very well. Mm-hmm. And I would, so I had problems with walking and my balance. And later I had an operation that rectified that through my sinuses, but I didn't really understand what was going on at the time. Yep. And then because I had this sinus problem going on too, I couldn't control my saliva glands, so I'd be drooling all over the place. I had bad breath. I mean, I was a pretty tough case at the time. So, it, you know, kids are kids, right? And I think I was pretty, tough to be around. And this one particular event was a birthday party. Yeah. And this kid was throwing his party, and everybody in the neighborhood knew about it. And I was the only one that didn't get invited. And I remember saying to this kid, well, how come I don't get to come? And he said, well, your breath is so bad, I'm afraid you'll stink up my party and you'll drool all over my cake. And so you can't come. You can't come.
Kids can be brutal without even being aware of the impact that their words create, huh?
Yeah, I mean, that was how he saw it. He was just kind of stating the way it was for him, and it was his birthday, and that's what he wanted, right? Mm-hmm. So, but of course, yeah, you know, when you're young, that's pretty devastating if that's your only world and your only connection to your world, right? So, yeah, that story you're talking about is the classic... here's this birthday party happening behind this hedge, and it's a typical English hedge. It's high enough that I can't see what's going on the other side, but I can hear everything. And there's kids laughing, and I can hear them playing party games. And, you know, I'm imagining birthday cake and fun and all the stuff that goes with a party, and I'm not a part of it. And I remember looking around my neighborhood, and it was so quiet, you could hear a pin drop. And I thought, wow, you know, there's not one kid outside here with me. They're all in there.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm not. And I remember thinking on a very deep level, you know, what's wrong with me that I'm not in there?
Yeah.
And that was where I think a lot of the messages started for me. I'm not okay. I'm broken. There's something wrong with me integrally, you know. And that really shaped me. And in that moment, I believe what occurred for me was I don't really want anyone to experience this. Mm-hmm. That really shaped me. It shaped me, and that became like a life purpose or mission for me, that I think everyone should be included, that everyone deserves to have their party bag at the birthday party. And that was really big for me at the time. And I remember also getting very ingenious about ways to get the kids to play with me, because I had these handicaps, right?
Exactly.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I used to. My dad wanted football pools, which in them days was a little bit like the 649 here, but not a huge win, but enough that we got a couple of bikes. And none of the kids in the block had bikes, just me and my brother. So I used to rent my bike for a dinky car for two rides around the neighborhood. And then I got this massive collection of dinky toys. So guess whose yard all the dinky toys were in, right?
Well, of course.
Paul. Yeah. And guess we all had to come to play.
Of course. Well, it's interesting. You know, Paul, this is such a powerful story on two levels. And on one level, I find it being a really potent example of how some of our, you know, childhood moments of deep pain, I mean, being excluded at the age of seven and everybody is out there and you're separate, how that forms and informs how our life continues. I mean, I know of your parties and celebrations and events, and it's like, well, if there is room, everybody is in and nobody is excluded. Mm. And the other is also how we find strategies to compensate for that deep pain, like what you are saying, you know, renting the bikes out and having the dinky toys. I mean, and that becomes part of those behaviors that we use from those earlier times and how they perpetuate themselves throughout our lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I was thinking about it too, because I had to learn how to walk myself. I taught myself to walk, and I remember having to really concentrate on where my feet were. And I learned how to walk straight the same time I learned how to count to 100. Mm-hmm. So for me at the time, it was a big deal to learn how to count to 100.
Yeah.
And I remember the two of them being together, counting and walking. And finally getting to, yeah, I can count to 100. I did it. At the same time, going through this walking piece as well. And so because I was challenged, it became really important to me to fit in.
Yeah.
And the message was, I want to be as normal as everyone else. And also, if I'm broken, then I need to be special somehow. I need to master things so that I can be worthy, let's say, of people's recognition or fitting in. And so it became important for me to master things. And, you know, I'm thinking about the stepping later in life, becoming a professional dance teacher, you know, and teaching other teachers how to teach dancing, and how that shaped me too. And going from that to really enjoying being in my body and learning how to master it.
Mm-hmm. And I find a wonderful and a very healthy way of taking that childhood challenge and transforming into something that is really life-giving. What were some of the things? I mean, you said, you know, like you had to become masterful in things. I wonder whether there have been a ways that we can call unhealthy of trying to prove to the world that, no, I'm okay, I'm good, I'm better than things that you've done throughout your life.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the other side of the coin, isn't there? There's the one side where you learn the skills and all those skill sets, right, to really
yeah.
become, you know, masterful in whatever you're doing. The other side is this ongoing sort of belief that I'm not enough, so I'm so driven that instead of doing these things out of joy, I'm doing it to belong, to feel like I'm important enough to be lovable, really.
Mm-hmm. To prove that you are enough and more.
Oh, yeah, because when I was younger, I won just about every award. I mean, it was crazy in my school, from writing award to the kick and pass punt football award to the athlete of the school to the basketball, the chess champion. I mean, you name it, I won everything. Mm-hmm. And I was so driven, I had to win because my self-worth was involved. Who I was involved. If I didn't win, what did that mean? Who would I be in it? So yeah, the downside was driving myself to the place of exhaustion, getting so caught up in being the best that there was no time to just be, mm-hmm. you know, and play and have fun and enjoy things. Although I enjoyed mastering stuff, you know, it was always fun. But so driven, you know, I'm high jumping and it's dark and I'm hurting myself because I can't see and I'm still trying to high jump.
Yeah, these are quite the stories. What were a few of the defining moments for you along the journey, ones that have been kind of course correcting and directing you towards where you are at right now?
Well, I think there's a few pivotal ones, and I'll just touch on the basic ones. You know, getting very driven when I was younger to be the best, and then finding out that that didn't really serve me, in that it didn't still get me the closeness I was looking for or the sense of feeling good about myself. I think at some point, because it didn't work, I just gave up. And I got into addiction pretty heavy, into drugs and alcohol. And at the time, LSD was big at the time. And actually, in a funny kind of way, it opened up another window of consciousness for me. And by the time, you know, I hit grade 10, I just completely shifted my focus. I went from partying and drinking and doing all this stuff with everybody to meditating every day and doing yoga and being in nature and getting really inner contemplative. And I really discovered in myself a reality I didn't realize existed through that process. And then I had an awakening experience that there was so much more inside of me than I realized. I was like, holy mackerel. And within that self-discovery, I also realized another connection to people and things around me. And I was more like, you know, I'm really one with everybody and everything rather than feeling so separate from. And so that was a deeply spiritual experience for me, which I would say really changed me, because then I seemed to be a lot less interested in a lot of ways in the outside. And then interestingly enough, that went on for about 3 years. I started to really miss being a part of, again, my friends, my peers, and I ended up kind of going back into that life again in an addictive way with my group of friends in order to belong. So it was really about belonging for me again, and it seemed like I needed to dive into it again, but never quite the same as where I was before I had that experience. And then that went on for a few years, really that outward drive again to go, okay, there must be something outside of myself that will bring me some happiness and help me to belong again. So I was off and running, and I was still driving myself pretty hard as well in that process. So I obviously had to go and learn some more about that. And I would say two pivotal things happened. I did end up becoming quite successful in my life in West Vancouver. I was a REMAX realtor, and I was like award-winning realtor. Yeah. And I was doing really well. And I, you know, I had everything that you would think would make you happy. You know, the house, the right car, the right, you know, partner in a lot of ways, and the prestige and the awards and blah, blah, blah. And I remember going to this award ceremony in the Pan Pacific Hotel, and I had my nice suit, my Jag, and all that kind of stuff. And I go to this awards seminar, and they got ice sculptures, and it was pretty cool. And I'm coming back over Lionsgate Bridge after the ceremony, and I kind of had arrived using everything I knew how, working hard, doing you know, the personal empowerment stuff, the discipline, the everything I could muster in order to master and make this happen. So one more time, I did master it, I did get it, I did achieve it, but in that moment, I felt so empty. It was like I could have turned left off the Lionsgate Bridge instead of continuing to go over it. You know, and I just, that was a defining moment for me. When I really got it, I thought, you know, it doesn't matter how much I try to fill this from the outside, it just doesn't work for me. And it was at that time, too, that my health gave away. And I got really, really sick with a virus called Epstein-Barr. And I was sick for about, a few years, and got quite immobilized with it. And I think another defining moment was like going to that place where nothing outside was going to change anything, and then also coming to terms with the fact that there was a part of me that didn't feel worthy of letting myself really be happy and succeed. So I was very aware that I was driven, and there was a part of me that was unhappy.
You know, these are this is such a powerful moment when I look at something like that, because here you are seemingly at the absolute top of what our society dictates as that of what we need to have to be successful and happy, and you are driving there on the bridge and thinking, well, I'm just about to turn off. And it's like the absolute high and the absolute low almost at once. And these often are those really profound moments of awakening. And as I'm listening to you, and I know that you've had a few, I know that that's not the only one, and we might not be able to cover all of them. One of the things I'm curious about, when you get to those moments when you think like, okay, I've achieved all that and it's absolutely meaningless, what keeps you going? What kept you going?
That's, you know, interesting enough, I remember being just sick and tired of sick and tired, really. Mm-hmm. Like just tired and feeling like there's got to be another way. So whatever that deep part of us is in that place that we get to in that moment in time that goes, there's got to be another way. It's like a deep moment of humility, maybe, where in that moment there's a drive inside that really is love, let's say, and that wants love, that wants the pure expression of joy, that wants to be an expression of that and feel connected, that is so powerful and so deep. And even though the pain is so great, it's greater. Mm-hmm. And there's a voice in all of us that I think we hear a lot of times when we're in the darkest places. Because our own will, our own self-will is so loud, say the ego voice is so loud, that the quiet voice of truth or spirit in us, our deepest reality, isn't being heard because, you know, I'm too busy listening to this other voice that's going, Paul, just get out there and do this and do that and do this and you'll be happy, you know, act this way, act that way, and everything's meaning good. It's very loud, and it's the world, right? It's the world. And yet there's this quiet voice that if I get still enough to listen, I can hear, and it feels unmistakably true and real and loving. And when I listen and I drop into that place, there really is a sense of joy, connection, authenticity, a deeper reality. So I think it's in all of us. And in that moment, I heard it through my pain of just driving myself from that place for so long, from the ego place, that, you know, it's the bottom, they call it in Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's where we hit that bottom where I'm beaten in that moment. Like I'm going, you know, my way is not working. Mm-hmm. And so from this humble maybe place, I would say humility being willing enough to let go of the way I think things are for a different view of reality. Mm-hmm. So in that moment, it's like a defining moment of being open to something new. Because there's a saying that I love in the 12-step program is, if I always think what I've always thought, right, I'll always feel the way I've always felt. And if I always feel the way I've always felt, I'll always do what I've always done. And if I always do what I've always done, I'll always get what I always got. Okay. Nothing changes if nothing changes. Yeah. So those, to me, are defining moments in our life when, you know, we've probably been taught certain things, if we do this and do that, and this is how the world works, and if I just play ball, at the end of it all, I'm going to be happy. And then finding out you're not, and then having a redefining moment of, well, if I'm not all of that, then who am I? Absolutely. When I'm not the car I drive, and I'm not the clothes I wear, and I'm not the people I hang out with, and I'm not the job that I do, you know, or the partner I'm with, or whatever, who am I? That's defining moment.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's a beautiful description, and it's great because it leads me to the next question, because it's, if I'm not this and I'm not that and I'm not that, then what's there in the center? And what follows from it, what is it from that center? What is that gift, if there is one or maybe several, that from that place keeps expressing itself through your work? I wonder how much of a sense do you have of that? Because again, you know, the journey continues, the seemingly the external things shift and transform. But what is that inner essence that keeps expressing itself through you?
Well, you know, I look at things like Living Vision, which is the retreat we do, which is basically a collection of artists and healers and visionaries coming together in community, having fun, all being in the birthday party, all being inclusive, you know. Yep. And the moments that define it for me are when I see another person breaking through that place of being blocked from true authenticity within themselves and others, that connection to others. And you see someone being brave enough to go, you know, even though I've been really hurt and even though I've been disillusioned, right, I still believe there's still this place in me that still believes, and that when I allow myself to connect to that place in my heart, that I experience joy. And to feel that sense of connection in that moment that that person has from a real kind of authentic place, and I'm connecting to that person in a real authentic way. And for me, that feeling, there's just nothing like it, you know, that it's almost like we're all coming home together. And it's all we really want. It's not so much that we want to be better than each other. We just want to belong. And we want to feel like we're contributing and we're expressing something valuable to everyone and everything in a way that yeah, is uniquely us. And that's what really inspires me. And it brings me to tears, or I just feel my heart and I'm just like, wow, you know, I'm so thrilled that this person's getting an authentic sense of who they are and that they're now going to be able to express their gifts that are truly uniquely them. And then they feel seen in it, and they know that they're just as lovable and important as everyone else in that community, for who and what they are and what they can bring. And yeah, it's that sense of belonging, that unity, I guess, unity consciousness.
Yeah. It's beautiful, you know. I mean, I can hear and feel the passion in your words as you speak, even if I don't look at the picture. I mean, we are on Skype, so I can see you visually, but I can feel it. And it's interesting, right? Because it's, I mean, that unity and that belonging, you know, that simple and that much of a life journey that is not always that simple. So we are kind of coming to the end. We have a few minutes left, but I guess my last question here is, you know, what would be a gift, a lesson, an advice you would share with others who are on the same path, whatever phase they're on? What would you tell them? What would you leave them with?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, one of the things with my daughter, I used to drive her to school a lot, and I remember a conversation with her, Sade, that I said, you know, Sadie, I think one of the really valuable things that we can do is keep a bliss journal and notice when you're feeling connected. Notice when you're feeling joy. Notice when you're alive and anchor to it, because where your focus goes grows. So it's really important to focus on what you want, not what you don't want. Mm-hmm. Because the manifestation principle of the intelligence of this universe goes by what we focus on. It doesn't understand so much the languaging that we're having and the conceptualization of it that we're going through. It just sees where our attention is, and it gives us more of that. So I say to a lot of my clients, notice what you notice and you'll get more of what you notice. So be really clear about what it is you want and let your focus go there more than anywhere. And what better place to focus on than what brings you joy in your life? And it's great information. And if you can anchor into the sensation of where you are in that moment too, anchor in, like one of the analogies I use is, you know, those oil decks that are floating in the sea there that are they're satellite controlled. If they move more than I think a few inches, mm-hmm. it's detrimental. They could snap the pipes,
yep.
the drill bits, right? So it has to be exact. So the satellite is continually monitoring of all these different movements to keep it in place. And there's a lot of things going on that it's monitoring all at the same time. But it, in that, it keeps it stabilized there. You know, and so I kind of look at it like that. Stay centered in the awareness of all of the components that are going on to help you stay in that place, that state of joy, of bliss, of feeling connected to yourself. Become very aware and make it more important than being right about being off course. Because beautiful. That's not what you want, right? Like, focus on what brings you joy, what makes you feel connected, and notice what's going on cognitively, emotionally, spiritually, physically, interrelationally, and just really anchor yourself in that place. And you'll always stay there. Mm. And you may go off course for a minute, but you'll bring yourself back.
Beautiful. You know, I'm just smiling because it's so delightful, and I've been keeping what I call my gratitude journal, which is a little bit like your bliss journal, where it's just I do it pretty much daily. I end of the day, I take a few moments to really connect and feel what gave me gratitude today, and feel that and just write it down. And it works because of really interesting way of how our brain works. We can skip those theories for now, but I know that one of my entries for today will be this conversation with you, and it's been absolutely delightful to hear bits and pieces of your journey and being able to share it with others who will be listening to it. So thank you for sharing those stories. Thank you for sharing your wisdom and your heart and your perspectives. And all those who are listening, have your own beautiful and fulfilling journey towards your right livelihood.